war broke out in Europe a century ago, more than 1 in 10 Missourians was German-American. With the dominance of Allied propaganda, they often found themselves sentimentally and culturally attached to what many other Americans thought was the wrong side. The United States' entry into the war in 1917 made German-Americans' lives even harder. By then, the questions were about loyalty and patriotism, and Missouri's German-Americans had to somehow prove theirs. I'm Monroe Dodd, and on today's Central Standard, we'll talk about the experiences of Missouri's German-Americans in World War I. That's ahead on Central Standard, after the news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Monroe Dodd. In our part of the country, we're accustomed to hearing Germanic names. Many of today's listeners, no doubt, have ancestors who hailed from German-speaking lands and did so a century and a half ago or even longer. So when the First World War broke out, and particularly when the United States entered on the side of countries that were fighting Germany, being German-American took on a whole new meaning. Today, we'll explore that meaning with the author of a book about the German-American experience in Missouri in the First World War. Our guest is Petra DeWitt. She teaches at the Missouri University of Science and Technology in Rolla. Her book is Degrees of Allegiance, Harassment and Loyalty in Missouri's German-American Community During World War I, published by The Ohio University Press. It was a winner of the Missouri Book Award. Petra DeWitt, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you so very much for having me.
First off the bat, how did Missouri and a lot of states in the Middle West accumulate so many people from the German-speaking lands of Europe?
Missouri offered economic opportunity for a lot of people in Germany itself or the German states at the time period. We had major changes from agriculture to industrial revolution, and a lot of people were experiencing changes in their lives. And Missouri seemed to be a place that offered economic opportunity in factories. It offered economic opportunity for farmers. It offered economic opportunity for a lot of people who seemed to experience so many difficult changes in Germany. At the same time period, we also have revolutions happening in Germany in the 1830s and the 1840s. So we have a sizable number of political exiles who are coming to Missouri as well. So Missouri really seemed to be a place where a lot of people could come and start over.
Uh-huh.
And you have individuals who are also writing books about Missouri, like Gottfried Newton, for example. Now, he's not the primary reason why people came over, but he's one of the many factors that would convince Germans or German speakers to come to Missouri.
So there was a whole big world out there you could go to, and Missouri became one of the places to go to because partly because of literature, but there were other reasons. Family?
Usually if somebody came over, they would write back letters, and people would be informed through these letters what economic opportunities existed, what land was available over here, what you could do. Somebody would realize, oh, this soil is perfect for wine growing, and somebody who was trained in viticulture would come over and establish wineries and so on. So really, at the core of much of this movement was this knowledge, be it through published sources or be it through private letters, that people would learn about Missouri, what was available, and so on.
Now, there wasn't until, I believe, the 1870s, a consolidated country called Germany. There were all principalities, Prussia and this, that, and the other, Hanover and such things.
Right.
Linked by, I guess, a common language, certainly, and a culture. So when these people who left for the opportunity they saw in Missouri and in other Midwestern states got here, what was their, to them, what did their homeland amount to back in Europe?
Back in Europe, it was a place of change prior to 1871. It was a place of upheaval for many of them because they had several wars, 1866, the war with Austria, for example. It's a place of economic change, economic uncertainty mm-hmm. for a lot of people. You had people who lived on farms for generations, but because of inheritance laws, these farms became smaller and smaller because you had large families at mm-hmm. the time period. So by the 1840s, 1850s, 1870s, there was little opportunity for many of them to survive on a small plot of land. You had in Prussia, for example, the changing over from serfdom and protection as an agricultural worker to loss of that protection by your lord under whom you lived. And so you become a farm laborer without protections. So you wanting to look for something different, be it work in industrial areas to mm-hmm. support your families, or be it finding opportunity for land somewhere else. And for some of them, that meant the United States or Missouri in particular.
But even despite how things might have been in the old country, there is always, I guess, among expatriates, a certain sentimental attachment to
sure.
a cultural attachment.
Sure.
And these Germans who moved to Missouri kept their cultural attachments.
Definitely did.
Kept their language there, didn't they?
Kept their language. Many of them did not just have an identity through the language. They also had an identity through their religion.
Mm.
So as Lutherans, the belief often was, especially if you look at the literature by the ministers, is that the only way you can really understand Lutheran teachings is if you hear them in German, not in another language. Okay, so that is part of your identity. You're Lutheran, you're German, so that's part and parcel of who you are. You might change your profession, but you're still a German Lutheran.
You mentioned in your book an incident at some time, I think in the 20th century, where German speakers in some cities would tell jokes to one another in German because it just wasn't as good, as funny as English.
Exactly.
So there were lots of reasons to do that. Religion was one of them. Just, facility with language mm-hmm. was another. And so by, like, the 1910s, I think, you write in your book, Germans represented more than 11% of all Missourians.
Yes, they did. They absolutely did. They were the largest ethnic group of the foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's taking the Anglo-Saxon perspective, but yeah. of the foreigners counted in the census, they were the largest ethnic group.
And they had established breweries in St. Louis and Kansas City. And,
mm-hmm.
and so there was an urban presence, definitely in St. Louis, for the German Americans
mm-hmm.
in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and as your research has gone, also into the rural presence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely correct.
Gasconade counties, mm-hmm. Herman, places that we mm-hmm. even think of today as, yeah, that's German. In fact, mm-hmm. they play on a tourist thing there.
Yeah, exactly. They were active in politics. By the time of World War I, the mayor of St. Louis was Kiel. Mayor Kiel, who's the grandson of German immigrants. So even though he often talked about, I can't speak German as well as my grandparents can speak anymore, but still he represented that ethnic group.
What then by the 1910s did Germanness, or being of German ancestry, mean to Missouri Germans? We were a couple of generations in by then, mm-hmm. especially from the mm-hmm. earliest waves. What did mm-hmm. that mean to them?
Being able to read the German language newspaper, keep learning about German culture, German politics in Germany itself, the reminders of what the fatherland to the grandparents looked like physically through those newspapers, being able on Sundays to go to the beer garden. You go to church in the morning, in the afternoon, you go with the family to the beer garden, you have a dinner there, you have the Gemütlichkeit, as they call it, the sociability with other people who are speaking your same language or come off the same background, even if they do speak English. It's participating in choirs, like the Liederkranz, for example, or being a member of the Schützenverein, which is the what we would call a rod and gun club today or something similar. So you go out on the weekend, you shoot at targets, clay shooting, whatever, right? And every year there would be a competition, and you get for the Schützenking, who is the king of all the riflemen and so on. So it's a cultural aspect that defines you as a German by 1910. It's still, as I said earlier, the religious aspect, that you're Lutheran, that you're evangelical, that you have the opportunity, if you need to hear the sermon in German. But if you're third generation, you're most likely going to be speaking in English. So you have that opportunity as well. You hear it on Sunday evenings.
Now, unlike some other ethnic groups, German Americans didn't have that big a problem fitting into business and into jobs and things.
Yeah. They adopted very quickly into the American capitalistic system. They became business owners, very successful business owners, not just the Anheuser-Busch families, but we have bankers, we have small business owners, we have investors, of course, successful wineries, breweries, and so on. So even as a unskilled worker, you could have success.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd, and we're talking about the German-American experience in World War I. Our guest is Petra DeWitt. Petra, so here are the Germans are, German-Americans, 11% of the population of Missouri, a large percentage in several other Midwestern states. Mm-hmm. And 100 years ago this summer, the war in Europe starts. Germany didn't start the war.
No.
It's debatable whether Serbia, Austria, Hungary did, but it was those two at odds that mm-hmm. gathered Germany and all mm-hmm. the other monarchies into it. And the Germany of the time was, like Britain and Russia, a monarchy.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Not necessarily any more evil an empire than any place else.
No, indeed, they had. When it comes, if you want to compare them with Great Britain, for example, they were not the size of the imperial empire like the British were. For example, they were kind of late coming at this, and they were really no different than most of the other monarchies. Indeed, the monarchs are actually related to each other. So, and with Kaiser Wilhelm II, we actually have the problem of him feeling like the black sheep in the family because his grandmother, Queen Victoria, didn't treat him as well as his cousins, for example. So there's that personal resentment that we have here as well. So
many of our perceptions as Americans who are not of German ancestry of Germany were developed, fortunately, unfortunately, by the experience, by the things Germany did in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
In which, yeah, they started it. They invaded Poland, and yes, there were the Nazis, and there was the brutality, and this, that, and the other. But before World War I, that reputation and I guess the truth of the matter was these places were much alike. Yeah, they were monarchies. Mm-hmm. The monarchies were a little bit teetering, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was democracy was on the grow in every country.
Sure, sure. And Germany prided itself in taking better care of its own people at the time period. Programs that had started under Bismarck with national health insurance, retirements, and so on. So the German people were proud of the empire under which they lived. So it was a good place for them.
So now we're in America in 1914, mm-hmm. and it's summer, and there's this war breaking out in Europe, but that's a long way away.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are in Missouri. St. Louis has a heavy German population, mm-hmm. little towns along the river. There's Germans in Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
Germans throughout Kansas,
right.
Germanic names everywhere. And World War I begins, is it about then that German Americans start to feel just a tinge of doubt? And why is that true? And if so, why was that?
I'm not sure if they felt a tinge of doubt. There was the question, what was this war about? Who's fighting whom? Is it Uncle Otto who is fighting the war, or is it the Kaiser who got us into the war?
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of the German Americans who are living here, who've been here for three generations, are distinguishing between family, between what they remember as the old fatherland. Many of them have actually never been over there, only have heard from their grandparents what it's like. And they dissociate this from what is happening on the battlefield. So there are lots of questions, but at heart, they're also wanting to support families, acquaintances in the old Germany.
The World War I is thought by some, a lot of people, to be the first big development of propaganda, the use of propaganda.
Most certainly.
And the British were able to control the propaganda mm-hmm. even before that came to the United States, even before the United States entered the war. So this was going to become a bit of a problem, wasn't it, for German Americans?
It was becoming a problem. The way Great Britain did this was by controlling the cable. the cable that went across the Atlantic. And they therefore then controlled the propaganda that came from Europe to the United States. And German Americans were trying to, especially the newspapers, were trying to get information from Europe and were trying to get that through any means possible. Some of the newspapers over here, even the German language newspapers, got to a point where they said, we're not publishing any more information about the war because we're knowing it comes through Great Britain, the enemy of Germany, right? So if they knew it came from a neutral source, they could rely upon it. But if they knew it came directly from the British, they often refused to publish it because they distrusted that information.
And German Americans, though 11% of the population of Missouri, and though they dominated life in several places of Missouri, nevertheless, throughout, were in the minority. Most Americans at the time, I think the majority of Americans, were of some sort of British descent and of English speakers. They were English speakers. And so, yeah, that's interesting how that came to pass. Even though Germans had assimilated somewhat into American life, they they nevertheless, valuing the old country as they did, could still be thought of as the other.
That is true.
Yeah. Now, one of the things the propaganda told Americans was that once the war began, Germany acted just awful. They were brutal, and, and look what they did to the Belgians and other stuff. I'm sure this has been argued out by scholars
definitely
in
has.
Europe alone, if let alone America, for decades. But was Germany acting worse than its enemies or the same?
To a certain degree, they were acting worse because they did violate the neutrality of Belgium. That is true. And several of the scholars have agreed that the ultimatum that they gave to Belgium was unfeasible, never giving Belgium really a chance to either surrender or open up the corridors for the Germans to travel through. Then you have the atrocities committed by individual soldiers, not necessarily given through orders by the upper command, which brings about the perception that they're more brutal, this brutal Hun who disregards all sensibilities and civil rights and so on. So, but you also have that propaganda because the British are using any and all examples of atrocities, minor, larger atrocities, to blow them up into major propaganda coups to paint the opponent, Germany, in such negative terms, and creating this perception of the Hun as this brutish person who uses this bloody club. I'm thinking of a poster that I saw as a recruitment poster with blood on it, and that the culture of the Germans, of all the Germans, is based on this brutality and bloodthirstiness.
And that goes on, and then suddenly in April 1917, from a combination of events, the United States enters the war, and that changes the picture for German Americans even more starkly.
Even more starkly, yes, because now they have to figure out who are we supporting? Are we supporting Germany? Are we going to hold bazaars to help hospitals in Germany to heal German soldiers? Or are we going to use that money to support the American Red Cross, which is then going to go over there to the European theater and help American soldiers? Who are we going to support? Who are we as a people? Are we Americans? Are we Germans? Can't we still be German Americans? There seems to be this pressure that they are feeling. We must come down on one side of the fence. We can't be in the middle.
And this leads to splits in the German American community. You're right.
It even leads to splits within the German American community. Absolutely correct. Yes.
So if I want to prove my patriotism, I can turn in somebody else. Maybe I don't like them. And
Yeah. If there's, you know, if somebody's suspicious of me, and we have somebody in the community who's worse than me, I can point the finger and therefore distract attention from me to that person.
And this happened in German-American communities in Missouri.
And this happened in several German-American communities in Missouri. Absolutely correct. We have, for example, in Chamois in northern Osage County, members who are of the Home Guard, who are German-Americans, who are forcing another German-American, Erwin Walz, to kiss the flag because he has made derogatory remarks about that home guard. So it all depends on where you are within the community, what you're doing, how patriotic you appear to the outside, and how you treat others within the community.
Now, you're right that Missouri did not have some of the extreme examples. There was a lynching and there were tarring and featherings that certain other states did. I know Minnesota, I think Illinois. That's true. And why was that, do you think?
That Missouri did not have those violent events? I believe there's several reasons for that. One of them is the organization within the state of Missouri during the First World War. From the federal level, we have orders by the National Council of Defense for every state to set up a state council of defense and for every state council of defense to establish county councils of defense. Well, Missouri went further. They went down to the township council level so that every township has its own council of defense. And they have the task of making sure that everybody buys Liberty Bonds, the baby bonds for the children, the war savings stamps, that the enlistments go all right, that people abide by the law when it comes to the Selective Service Act, and so on. So it's local individuals who are making sure the law is enforced, that the war effort runs smoothly, that the label of loyalty or disloyalty is not applied to that township. So that's one reason.
Oh my.
It's local people taking care of local problems. The other reason is that the state legislature is not around at that time period. Back in that time period, the Missouri Assembly only sat every other year. They had ended their session in April 1917, in essence with a resolution supporting the president and the war effort, and then they went home.
Yeah.
They would not sit again until January 1919.
And so opportunistic legislators didn't have a chance to...
Yes, they didn't have a chance to pass any laws. In Iowa, you have a governor who, in essence, by proclamation, forces everybody to no longer speak German in public. We don't have that in Missouri. Yes, we have a zealous governor who says, one country, one flag, we must all come together to sacrifice. But he's not out there on the streets saying, wait a minute, here by executive order, I'm saying no more German on the streets. So totally different political context at the time period. And he could have called the Missouri legislature into emergency session. He almost contemplated it for other issues like labor unrest, coal shortages during a winter. That was extreme between 1917 and 1918. But never in order to run the war effort in the state, which you would think would be more important than some of the other things that were happening. So he never called them into special session.
Do some of your ancestors trace back to Germany? Have you heard from them tales of anti-German sentiment in our region? What have you heard about World War I and the case of German Americans? When we come back from the break, you can call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, and or email us at kcur.org. We'll be back talking with Petra DeWitt about German Americans in Missouri in World War I. I'm Monroe Dodd, and you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Monroe Dodd. With us today is Petra DeWitt, who is the author of Degrees of Allegiance, Harassment and Loyalty in Missouri's German-American Community During World War I. Petra DeWitt will be speaking about the experiences of German-Americans in that conflict at the Kansas City Public Library's Central Branch on Sunday, August 17th at 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that.
That should be a good group that day. We said before the break that if you have ancestors or heard about it, I think there's probably precious few people alive who will remember being German-American in Missouri during World War I, but certainly stories are told down by families. Give us a call, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Now, you can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And we have Carrie calling from Waldo. Good morning, Carrie. Carrie, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Carrie. Welcome to Central Standard. Well, we're going to have to move along from Kerry. Petra DeWitt, one of the things you mentioned was that there was not a uniformity across the country in the attitude toward German Americans because life is more complex than that.
Sure.
Local themes often dominate the thing. How did that affect the lives of German Americans in Missouri?
Well, in some areas, you would have much pressure upon German Americans to appear loyal. There would be attempts to coerce German Americans to do their bit. And what's fascinating to read is newspaper articles. For example, newspapers would publish who bought Liberty Bonds, who became members of the Red Cross. And then they would point out who did not. That is, especially the wealthy individuals within a community. And for some reason, they were able to get information that we would consider protected or privileged. I'm thinking of one person, his name escapes me right now, but it happened in St. Louis, and they published his name and said he's never bought a Liberty bond, but we know he has $2,683 in his savings account. Surely he can buy some Liberty bonds.
Ooh.
Yes. So coercion, intimidation would be widespread in some communities, including in German-American communities themselves, Gasconade County, for example. Gasconade County, which is the most German county within Missouri.
Now, that's east of Jefferson City.
Yes.
And its seat is Herman.
The seat is Herman, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Famous for its wineries.
Right.
And here you have individuals within the community particular of Herman, the mayor, George Klank, for example. And they would be canvassing the county in their automobiles and would not hesitate to publish the names of individuals who did not buy Liberty bonds, for example, define them as being yellow, define them as being slackers, because they were afraid that the county as a whole would get that reputation of being disloyal. And once you get attention, the Missouri Council of Defense, even though it deferred all responsibility to county and township councils, once they have information that there is widespread disloyalty, they would then call the Secret Service and have the county or specific people investigated by the Secret Service to see whether they are chargeable under the Espionage Act, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And on a, I guess, a less threatening level, well, maybe just as threatening, German names on streets.
There were some communities, again, St. Louis comes to mind, where there was a widespread effort, where newspapers like the St. Louis Republic, the editor of the newspaper, took it upon himself to start a campaign to make St. Louis 100% American. He published all the different names, like Berlin Avenue, for example, and he said that should be changed. And it was done. It became Pershing Avenue. Yeah.
Let's go back to our board right now. Kerry, let's try you again. Welcome to Central Standard, Kerry. Hello? All right. Let's go on to John in Brookside. John, good morning. Well, we're having a little bit of problems with our boards today. We'll try John in Brookside. Are you there?
Yeah.
Good morning, John. What's your question? We're having considerable problems. Hello, John. Can you hear us? All right. So, Petra DeWitt. Sorry, we're having a little bit of problem
That's
with
okay.
our phone callers today. We'll get over that, I'm sure. There were German language newspapers here in Kansas City. There were two of them.
Two of them. The Presse and the Staatszeitung. Yeah.
Which means the State Today and
State paper.
State
yeah.
paper.
Yeah.
And the editor of one of them got in trouble for publishing some, it wasn't pro-German stuff as much as it was, what, against the Selective Service?
Against the Selective Service Act, critical of Woodrow Wilson, critical of the war effort. That Woodrow Wilson, in essence, was in the pocket of the British.
Uh-huh.
So, and he was charged under the Espionage Act because once you make, in the minds of prosecutors, once you make comments negative about the government that might interfere with the effectiveness of the military to fight the war over there. So you could be charged, once you make expressions like that, that might interfere with the military, you could be charged under the Espionage Act.
And Editor Gleaser wound up in Leavenworth.
He wound up in Leavenworth, yeah. He only got 2 years. He could have gotten up to 20 years, but yes, he wound up in Leavenworth.
Stuff that today would be absolutely protected. People would be, I think, shocked if they were jailed for saying that kind of stuff.
You might be surprised. The Espionage Act is still in effect today.
Is that right?
Yes, it is. That's actually part of my next research that I'm doing, the long-term legacy of this Espionage Act. Because we also had a Sedition Act that Congress passed in 1918, which in essence suspended the freedom of speech. You could not make any comments whatsoever about the president, the American government, the military, or the American flag. Mm. And you could be charged under the Sedition Act, fined up to $10,000 or placed into federal prison for up to 20 years.
And the paper of which he was the editor eventually merged during the war, I guess, with the other German paper in town. Mm-hmm. And then they both disappeared after the war.
Both disappeared after the war, yeah.
Is that because there was a residual anti-German sentiment or simply because generations were not speaking German anymore?
Well, in Kansas City itself, you have a smaller German population than you have, for example, in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Kansas City has about a quarter of the size of German speakers as St. Louis has. So the survival of two newspapers was questionable in the first place. But then the war did play a small role in convincing German Americans, well, do I really need to keep buying this paper? Why don't I maybe buy the Star or one of the other ones, a journal, and so on?
So intimidation sometimes works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Much more so than in St. Louis, where the Westliche Post survived into the 1930s.
Westliche Post into the 1930s in St. Louis, and then it too. Let's go, speaking of Kansas City and German Americans, let's go now to Rita in Brookside. Good morning, Rita. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning.
What's your question?
Well, I have a comment about the, I guess, distrust between the Catholics, Germans living in Kansas City and Kansas City government as a whole. There was a parish, St. Peter's and St. Paul's, in downtown Kansas City. I believe it was at 7th and Admiral Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And between the mayor and Pendergast at the time, they determined they wanted to widen that street, which essentially left the church up in the three stories up in the air, and the Germans could not get to church.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, there was the Catholic bishop said he would reestablish St. Peter's and St. Paul's Church at one time, and I believe part of that has been reestablished as St. Peter's Church in Kansas City, Missouri, homes and Brookside, or homes in Meyer Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks, Rita. What about churches?
Churches experienced a lot of pressure during the First World War. One way of expressing their patriotism was to open up the doors of the churches for political activism, to have meetings for the Liberty Loan campaign, to have meetings for the Red Cross campaign, for the War Saving Stamp campaign. And many of the bishops or the ministers in the Protestant faith said, wait a minute, we have separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. We should not have to be forced to open the doors of our churches to these political events. And, of course, then there was the other pressure that so many of the churches still, when it comes to Catholic Church, for example, we have confessions still being given in German, because the only way that you as an individual could really express the sins you've committed or understand what you have to do when you speak one-on-one with your confessionary is by speaking it in German rather than in English, right? Sermons in Catholic churches were not necessarily in German because so much of what you hear is in Latin anyway.
Yeah.
And the Archbishop Glennon, who sits in St. Louis, for example, he said, you can use German if you think you need to. This is not a war about language. But he really pushed that the Catholic churches ought to open their doors to these events. The same pressure for the Amish, who were living just south of Kansas City, for example. They wanted to they do everything in German in church at the time period. They, too, resisted the opening up of churches for these so-called political events. And community after community is working out compromises of how to get them on board, appear loyal, but at the same time still give them opportunity to speak German within the congregation.
Mm-hmm. Let's go now to John in Brookside. John, good morning.
Morning.
What's your comment?
Oh, I was just going to add an anecdote about my great-grandmother. She immigrated here from Germany in about right after the Civil War. And my great-grandfather and her had a farm in Lenexa, Kansas. Anyway, she was put on a spy watch list by the governor of Kansas for some reason. And there's no evidence my grandfather was. My great-grandfather was on the list. It was just my great-grandmother. And, you know, they got the German community in Lenexa got, you know, threatening letters from I think the governor sent these letters out on his letterhead threatening Germans. Well, he would just say, well, if you're not generous in buying bonds, you know, we can't really guarantee your safety. Things like that. So, yeah, it was pretty rough.
Yeah, and again, here we have a different an example of one person, the governor of Kansas, being much more zealous. Yeah. Then, for example, the governor of Missouri. The governor of Missouri would have never thought of doing that. Indeed, what the story we have in Missouri is Governor Gardner of Missouri, 3 years before the war, when he was running for governor, actually appealed to German Americans to vote for him. He had actually gone to Germany just a couple of years earlier to learn about land bank programs that he then introduced to the Missouri legislature. So
he has a lot of constituents.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
he didn't want to alienate them all.
Right, but in Kansas, we're the opposite, right? There we have a governor who wants to appear super patriotic, super loyal, and who does he pick on? German Americans.
Yeah, bearing in mind, too, that there was an outpouring of propaganda from, like, the Creel Commission.
Sure.
Everybody was reading that stuff in the newspapers, like, every day, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it made for a really bad atmosphere.
Right.
Kind of like McCarthyism, you know, that kind of an atmosphere.
That is true. That is true.
Maybe McCarthyism, maybe it was the template for the McCarthyism. You know, you could make that argument.
Interesting.
But a lot of the same things happened.
Well, that is true. There is a connection between the zealousness during World War I and the first Red Scare, which actually began in 1919. When A. Mitchell Palmer went after Union leaders, the Wobblies.
The Attorney General.
Yeah, the Attorney General.
Didn't we have, isn't that the birth of the, what was it, the Espionage Act, I think? Right.
Well, the Espionage Act is in 1917, yes, but it will be used to go after the socialists in 1919 as well.
Yeah. Right.
Well, John in Brookside, thanks very much for your call.
You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go on to Bob in Overland Park. Bob, good morning and welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, thank you very much. Great show. My take on it was through my ancestors and everything. And when I was in grade school, I was in this parochial grade school, and I was told by my teacher at the time that we had entered the war on the wrong side, and she laid out her reasons. I just stood almost straight up at my desk at the time because it was so much different from what I'd been taught before, and she laid it out very well. I don't remember the point that she laid it out, but it made sense at the time.
Wow.
And another aspect, in the family, come to find out, great-grandfather had come from Germany, was in the Kansas City area, and they're sitting around after World War I is over with, and he gets a letter from Germany. And it says, we're starving. Send money.
Mm-hmm.
Send money. 9 months later or so, gets another letter. We're still starving. Please send money. Well, it finally comes out that she had a family in Germany, had come to the United States, established himself, but sent money back for his wife and two sons to come to Kansas. She doesn't come. So he sends more money a second time. She writes back the second time and says, not coming at all. You're on your own. Oh. So then he establishes another family over here in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, Bob, thank you very much for your call. Carrie, who tried to call us earlier and we had some difficulty, apparently wanted to know, Petra DeWitt, whether Missouri's German-American population was relatively larger than in other parts of the country, that 11% you mentioned.
Not necessarily larger than other parts of the country. Nebraska has a sizable, Minnesota has a sizable German-American population. There's German-Americans throughout the Midwest. So Missouri does not necessarily have a larger one.
Okay. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd, and our guest today is Petra DeWitt. We're talking about German-Americans in Missouri during World War I. I know that in Kansas City, there's a hospital called Research Hospital that had a different name.
Yeah, it was called the German Hospital once, yes, and established by and run by a lot of German or German-trained physicians.
And so you have an anecdote, or somewhere I read an anecdote about German people or of German ancestry like to go to German hospital because they would have the German doctors.
Sure, there's that reputation that as if you are trained as a doctor in Germany, that you had a better training than some of the American-trained doctors. Huh. And, of course, you could talk to them in German as well because you knew certain diseases by certain names that you expect these German doctors to know as well.
Let's go now to Joyce in Waldo. Joyce, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to talk to you about my my mother-in-law. Her family came over to America in around 1890 from the Black Sea area.
Okay.
And they settled in South Dakota, in a little town, Loyola, South Dakota, and they were all German-speaking, and they went to Lutheran Church and spoke German. And my mother-in-law, in 1917, was in confirmation class.
Mm-hmm.
And when the war broke out, they were learning everything in German. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't even know what it was in English.
Mm-hmm.
And the war broke out, and immediately they had to quit speaking German. No more German, and they had to relearn everything and learn the language in English.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big issue for her. My grandmother on my side, her father came over from Prussia, and the same thing. They couldn't speak German when the war broke out. But when I was little, she used to sneak things to me, like she would teach me the German alphabet, and she would teach me different things in German, so that when I went to grade school, 5 years old, I got up and I just spouted off the German alphabet and thought I was the smartest kid in class.
Good for you.
Joyce, did you take German in high school or college?
No, but my husband speaks German, and he lived in Germany for a while, and we have been to Germany. So it's, you know, it's good to have somebody who speaks German when you're there.
Sure, definitely.
He still takes a German paper so he can keep up on the reading and writing of it.
Well, Joyce, thank you very much for your call. If you'd like to join us, the number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And we did get an email from Lance, who said his grandfather grew up in far western Kansas, born in a German-American family. His entire family spoke German in public up until 1917 when the war started, and then strictly spoke German inside the home after the war began. In the Second World War, my great-grandparents were so ashamed with their home country that they completely stopped speaking German outside as well as inside the home. Petra, by chance, within the last month, I've heard someone, a well-educated young person, 30-something, say, why would they ban the German language? It's just a language. How do you respond to something like that? How do you explain that?
Well, what Americans at the time period associated German with was the enemy. if somebody speaks in German, you don't understand him, especially as an American, right? So you don't know, are they talking about the weather? Are they talking about family? Are they talking about food? Or are they passing on secrets? So Americans who did not know German did not know what these German speakers were speaking about. So that's why they picked on that language. It was the language of the enemy, the language of potentially endangering their lives.
You mentioned the complexity of local life. In quite a few rural cities with German populations, there were officials, German, American mayors and city councilmen and the other thing. I guess in some places like that in Missouri, if you're in the majority or there's a sizable amount, it's hard for the other side to get a mob mentality going.
That's true. Usually, when you have a large protected community, you don't have that pressure to appear patriotic. What comes to mind in Westphalia, for example, a strong German community. But you have a newspaper, a German language newspaper, that is very critical of the war, very critical of the federal government. And it's these Germans who, in essence, are pressuring the editor to shut down the paper so that they can keep on talking German on the streets. They can keep doing the things that they do as Germans in Westphalia. But there's no more attention being brought to the community because that newspaper is shut down.
You write also that Missouri has a strong tradition of individualism, freedom from government, things like that, also played a role in all that.
We kind of pride ourselves in that here in Missouri. I think the recent election demonstrated that again. So individuals want to be protected. Individuals, however, at the same time also look upon their neighbors. What are their neighbors doing? If they are messing up, they're going to bring the government upon the community. So it plays both ways.
Fascinating. Let's go to a caller now, Jonathan and Lawrence. Jonathan, good morning and welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. So I just was curious about a story that my mother has told me. She grew up in New Ulm, Minnesota, and a very German population there. And she's told me that the churches, the Lutheran churches that her grandparents, went to were firebombed because they didn't stop speaking German. And I'm just curious if you've heard about things like that. You know, with family stories, I never know exactly what to believe from that many generations back.
It is possible that that is correct. Again, different states experience different degrees on persecution or harassment. There were incidences where churches would be painted yellow because they were not up to par with expectations of loyalty. In some communities, ministers were tarred and feathered for not allowing the adoption of English services. And possibly your family member may be correct that there was a firebombing of the church as well. Like I said, different areas, different degrees of fierceness.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan. Let's go now to William in Overland Park. William, good morning. Welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, good morning. Just another quick family story. During World War One time period, my great-great-grandfather was a member of the Kansas legislature, and he had various friends, associates there that they did speak German sometimes, and he was ordered that if he was ever heard speaking German again, he would be arrested. And, of course, he was a well-educated person, as many people at that time. He spoke English, German, and Latin because he was German Catholic, went to Catholic school, so they just switched to speaking Latin.
That's fabulous.
Of course, the irony also about it is that since they were from Russia, from the Volga German community in Russia, that they did not speak Russian.
That is true. Yeah, that is absolutely true. Thank you.
That's my story.
Thank you.
William, thanks for your call. Germans in St. Louis, Petra DeWitt, had a long history of patriotism, if you consider being on the Union side patriotic, which the winners would have considered it. Mm-hmm. In the Civil War, they were very anti-slavery and very much pro-Union.
Mm-hmm. They absolutely were, yes. Yeah, they reminded Americans during World War One constantly of that loyalty, that long-standing loyalty for generations. So why would I not be loyal now if I was loyal or if my ancestors were loyal during the Civil War? So they constantly reminded Americans of that.
But nevertheless, I guess the current enemy is the one that that you grow most suspicious
mm-hmm.
about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely correct.
All right, let's go now to one quick call from Abdul in Raymore. Good morning, Abdul.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning.
Yes, go ahead.
My question is maybe just a quick comment. You a while back mentioned the Hospital Research Medical Center. And if you or your guests will make a quick comment on the relationship of Germans regarding the African-Americans, because there is a little concern about African-Americans not allowed to go to that hospital for a while. And if you just make a comment on that, I'll appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Abdul.
I'm not sure that that is strictly an ethnic decision. That is, that German-Americans would not have treated African-Americans. We have to remember this is a time period of segregation, that this was a practice at the time period, and that perhaps German-Americans who might have wanted to treat African-Americans, already attracting attention during the war because they are German-Americans, would not want to step over that line of segregation on top of it, therefore getting even more or bringing even more attention upon themselves.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's show about World War I, Missouri, and its German-American population. Our guest has been Petra DeWitt, who will speak about this topic a week from Sunday, August 17th, at the Kansas City Public Library's central location at 10th in Baltimore, and that'll be at 2 p.m. Thank you, Petra, for joining us today.
Thank you. I very much enjoyed it.
For more information on our guests and upcoming shows, visit our website, kcur.org. Central Standard Friday was produced by Sylvia Marie Gross. We had studio help from Kim Noble. I'm Monroe Dodd. Thanks for being with us, and enjoy your weekend.